You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there! It's everyone's favorite overpriced menu item, Drew Gasparini, here with another amazing episode of Now We're Talking, the podcast that never trims its pubes, because this shit is all natural, baby! You're lucky to be listening to today's episode, and I'm certainly lucky to be hosting this party, because today's guest is a very talented star on the rise. He went from Jimmy Award winner to starring in the mega-hit Broadway musical Dear Evan Hansen. He recently played Linguini in Ratatouille, the virtual musical event, and he can currently be seen as Antoine in the Disney Plus series High School Musical, The Musical, The Series. Everybody, wake your ass up, because now we're talking with Andrew Barth Feldman.
Andrew, how are you, my handsome friend?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for agreeing to do this. I'm actually really excited to talk to you because I want to hate you so bad. I want to hate you so bad because you're so good. You know, when you hear of these people in show business and you're like, there's no way Keanu Reeves is that nice. There's no way Keanu Reeves helped out that old lady across the street. You're going to be Keanu Reeves.
That's very, very nice. That's very kind.
That's what it is. I've been a fan of yours since you kind of emerged into the Broadway scene, which was not long ago.
Yeah.
But you have made an already a very lasting impression. So I'm just kind of in awe of you. And I've had a lot of these, I'm calling y'all youngsters. I make it sound like I'm in my 60s when I say this, but like you and like Rachel Zegler and Antonio and, you know, the Renées of the world. And you guys have such a great essence about all of you, this new crew of people that I am so drawn to, because it's something I feel like I was so thirsty for when I first got into the business, which was just surrounding myself with people who were kind to one another while they watched each other climb the success ladder. It is so, so cool to see. So right out of the gate, I want to say good for you for keeping that kind of head on your shoulders. It rocks, my man. It really, really does.
Thank you very, very much. I love every single person you just named. They're the
best people. I do. Oh, they're all great. And a couple of them have done this podcast. And like I said, it's just tremendous to talk to them. So I do little to zero research before these types of interviews, because I wanted to feel loosey-goosey, baby. I wanted to feel loosey-goosey. So I'll start with a little story. So last night, I was watching a movie called Never Been Kissed. Have you heard of this movie?
I've heard of this movie, yes.
Okay. I think it certainly came out before you were born, because you were born in the 2000s. God, I just want to hate you so bad. It stars Drew Barrymore, and she plays a journalist, okay? Now, you tell me why you think I got cringed when I watched this last night. I used to love this movie as a kid, by the way. So I'm watching it again, and the story is she's a journalist who has to go undercover as a high schooler to like figure out some story. It's actually very unclear what it is she's trying to journal about, what it is, what the story for this newspaper that she writes for, that Gary Marshall's the president of, or whatever. It's very unclear what she's writing about, but she goes undercover and she goes to a high school and pretends to be a high schooler. And a teacher starts like just going up to her at the dance and is like, so do you want to slow dance? Do you want to do this? Yeah, but like, what the fuck was happening that I watched this at any point in my life prior to yesterday and thought, wow, what a cute story. That is the creepiest shit I've ever heard.
Yeah.
You know, and it reminds me of Big. You know the movie Big with Tom Hanks? It became the Maltby and Shire musical. Of course, I'm sure you've seen that movie. Have you seen that movie?
I've seen the movie. I was in a production of the musical. I played Lil Tom Hanks.
That surprises me 0%. You have a Tom Hanks quality about you. It's
thank you.
You do. You're very Tom Hanks-esque, I would say. I could see you having the same exact career. Go
sitcom to movies
to blockbuster megastar. That's going to be you, dude.
thank you very much.
Same thing though, like this older woman, like almost like fucks Tom Hanks, who's like an 11-year-old or some shit like that in the movie. How old is he supposed to be?
He is, I think he's turning 13.
He's turning 13 and he almost has sex with an older woman. And
he does indeed.
So thoughts on this, Andrew? What are your thoughts on these movies that came out? What do you think? And they're classics now. Never Been Kissed is in the category of classics.
Yeah.
There is so many problems with these films. What do you think? What should we do with these movies?
Well, they ain't good. I'd say they all have pretty misogynistic undertones, as well as just being creepy as hell.
Absolutely. You know, I didn't even say the worst part about Never Been Kissed is the minute it all comes to light, she goes, I'm actually 25 and I'm a journalist. He's like, oh, you lied to me. And then it's like,
wait. That's what you should have been. You should be like, yes, okay, that's great news for me.
Oh, thank God, because I was about to say, yikes, I got a crush on a 16-year-old. But here you are saying you're 25. This should clear things up. Instead, he gets upset. What is wrong with Hollywood?
This is like, my friend showed me a production of Mulan she was in. And I'm like, he should be like, huh, I got some stuff to figure out. You know, yeah. I think this is with all these characters.
100%.
It should be about, like, I got some stuff to figure out now.
Because in Mulan, it's like it seems like he's attracted to Mulan. While she's dressed up as a man.
So he's like, yes, I'm in love with this person and that's beautiful, but also I think I got some stuff to figure out. You know?
Yeah,
like,
dude. Yes. That guy has some stuff to figure out. Take a deeper look within. That's all we're saying here.
Yeah.
The theme of this podcast today is be you, kids.
Yeah, look, figure it out. Figure your stuff out.
Andrew, you know that you and I are both Andrews, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a part of you in your life that wanted to go the Drew route or the Andy route, God forbid?
So many people in my life have tried. I have this conversation probably once a month with like somebody new who's like, hey, does anyone ever call you Andy? Does anyone ever call you Drew? And I'm like, please, I dare you to try. Nobody can do it. It doesn't stick.
I don't know where I get off saying this, but you're not cool enough to pull off Drew.
I'll take that. I don't disagree. Alex Boniello calls me Drew when he's disappointed in me.
Oh my God, I hate that. Well, actually, that makes sense. That sounds like my entire high school like career.
He's like, all right, Drew. You know what? When I read the review for the New York Times review for Dear Evan Hansen that we got, which was a positive review, but he just like was encouraging me not to read it. He was like, just called me Drew for like days after that. Like, he just calls me Drew when he's disappointed in me.
I think that's a little odd. A show that's been open for a good chunk of time, they have to review it again because there's new people playing the parts.
So here's the thing.
If you already had tickets, what a bummer, because these new cast members, oi.
It's a very, very unique thing with this show because obviously when it opened, it was the Ben Platt show, and it should have been. He was magnificent,
of course.
But nobody thought it was going to nobody in the public thought it was going to last any longer than Ben leaving the show. So they had to re-review when Taylor was coming in. They knew it was going to get reviewed.
Yeah.
They told me it wasn't going to get reviewed, and they didn't think it was.
Yeah.
But basically the New York Times was like, he's getting too much press. We have to come back. And so
what was that experience like for you when you got that call? I mean, this is straight out of, again, very little research being done here, but I've heard things. You win the look at me, I'm a high school performer award. The Jimmys.
The
Jimmy Award, which that sounds like what you call the award for longest member. The Jimmy Awards. We'll give it to the high school kids. You win this award, right? You won. You're not like Antonio, who was a finalist but didn't win. You won. I hope he hears this. and then afterwards, you basically got a tap on the shoulder from the producer saying, like, expect a phone call. How did this work out? I really want to know.
So, okay. Great question. So Tara Rubin, who's the casting director for Dear Evan Hansen, was a judge that night.
I love Tara Rubin.
She is truly the best human being. And Stacey Mindich, who's the lead producer of Dear Evan Hansen, was also just in the audience because for the first time, Dear Evan Hansen was sponsoring the Jimmy Awards, which means... You know, every year the Jimmy kids go to see a show. This was the show is Dear Evan Hansen, and now every year forever, Dear Evan Hansen's going to sponsor it, and they're going to go see Dear Evan Hansen.
Yeah.
So Stacey was in the audience, and the legend goes, as she told me, I have no reason to believe this isn't true, that she texted Tara Rubin at intermission after I sang goodbye, before I had won or anything, and said, that's our next... That we have to get him in the room. That's our next Evan.
Wow.
And so Tara Rubin that night at the after party at Planet Hollywood... cornered me, and that a lot of people are cornering me, but she cornered me and she was like, we have to talk soon about what your future is going to look like.
Yeah.
And this was really like about college, like what I was going to do with college and all this stuff. In between that moment and my meeting with her, I get an email that I have been asked for a callback in front of Michael Greif, Stephen Levinson, all these people. I had never auditioned for Dear Evan Hansen. It was a callback.
So they just hopped you right to the front of the line.
They skipped me all. I skipped 100% of the
process. You got to do what everybody is trying to do with this vaccine currently.
Yes. I skipped the whole. I essentially just walked up to a Rite Aid at like 7 p.m.
So the criteria is all the way different. It's like you have to be under 17 years old. It's the exact opposite of what we're going through now.
Exactly.
Okay, wild, wild, wild.
So I go to meet Tara. I'm like, what about this? She's like, you're going to do great. Don't worry about it. I go in. It's Michael Greif, Stephen Levinson, Benj Pasek, Justin Paul, Alex Lacamoire. It's everyone. Yeah. Stacey.
What a room full of nobodies. Jesus Christ.
It was my first audition for a Broadway show ever. My mind was like exploded. And so I walk out of that room after I finish. I'm skipping a lot of the story. It doesn't matter. But I walk out of the room and Tara comes out and she says, can I take a picture of you? You're going to want to remember this.
Oh my God.
So she takes this picture of me in this like little polo shirt with my like thermos and a backpack.
It's a Super Mario thermos.
Yeah, pretty much. I think it had tea in it. I don't know. It was like broken a little bit because I had had it for like years and dropped. Like it was all.
Yeah.
I was a mess and I had no business being in that room. And they took
no, the clearly that's not true. You had all of the business being in that room. I love that.
It worked out beautifully. Oh, and I'm to very, say the least. Thankful.
And do you think it's because of, and I really do want to get to know more about you and just like what kind of a wacko you must have been in middle school. I just think all theater kids have just like at the very least a tinge of crazy person inside of them.
100%.
And I want to tap into that a little bit. But do you think the Dear Evan Hansen, this might be a stupid question, but for those listening, they might not know how this works or even if it works this way.
Sure.
Do you think your time in that show is what opened other doors for you going forward?
Oh my God.
Or do you think this would have been the trajectory for you regardless?
No, I think so much had to be put in place. Like this role had to exist at this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
In on Broadway for me to have had the trajectory that I had. I don't know what would have happened. You would have been
Tom Hanks. I already know.
Well, that's but I don't know. I mean, I still don't know what's going to happen, you know, but like all I know is that I'm someone who has to be making things and stuff like that. So I would have done that forever regardless of whether I had a platform or not, but I don't know if that would now have the platform that it has with the stuff we've been doing. So but with Dear Evan Hansen, like I was not ready to do that. When I was cast, I was not ready. When I started, I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
It was the time in the show, the time that they gave me, the room that they gave me to grow as a person and a performer,
yeah,
knowing that that's what was going to happen, like investing in me long term.
Was the rest of the cast kind of like taking you under their wing? Or were they like, hurry up and like learn this shit because we're already vetted here?
No, Alex was kind of telling me the other day, we talk about this every now and then.
He intimidates me.
He'll do that. He is pretty damn,
and I'm absolutely intimidated by him.
He did intimidate me at the beginning of our process of just me being in the show, and I, especially because like I knew who he was obviously, and I was a little boy, and still I'm a little boy. But now I think at this point I know him too well. Like I know him better than I know myself. I know him better than anybody, and I understand everything about him. I know I know if he's complimenting me, he's not going to say anything. I know that, like it's not like I don't have any reservations about him anymore. So you don't have to be intimidated by him, is my point.
I appreciate that.
He walks the world. We were just talking about this. Even when you weren't quote unquote ready, you understood what it meant to be present on that stage, and you just had this like gratitude, like. He was like, this is what he said also recently. Was like, when I came in, everyone was like, oh my God, he's going to destroy himself. This is ridiculous. Like, there shouldn't be a kid, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I walked in and the way he puts it is that nobody in the world wanted to be anywhere more at any time than I wanted to be there in that moment, in that theater with those people.
Oh, I bet.
And so they could just see how badly I wanted it and how much it meant to me, that they knew I was going to be fine.
Got it. But you give that, you give that, like, even just right now in this podcast, I'm looking at you over Zoom and I'm like, this guy's happy to be here. This guy's excited to be here. And frankly, like, in all of my experience in the theater world, I don't want to work with anybody who has even a hint of the opposite of what that is.
It's interesting.
I really want people to have this, holy shit, we get to do this. I am so ready to do my best. I really want the whole thing to be good, not just me. I want to contribute to this big fat thing. You know, that seems like the attitude you
gratitude,
kind of come forward with.
Gratitude is part of the job. Like, maintaining, what I came to understand very, very quickly was that maintaining gratitude for it is part of the job. You have to remind yourself, like, work hard at reminding yourself.
Listen up, you fucking kids out there. Listen to what Andrew is saying. He is dead right. Gratitude is part of the job. And speaking of gratitude, my friend, it is amazing to see how you've used your platform. I see you doing all sorts of things that you could qualify as give backs, charitable things. During this pandemic in particular, you've done such an amazing job at making sure that fans and theater nerds, who I love, the world doesn't spin without theater nerds, are keeping their thumb on the pulse of what's to come and making sure there is something for them to watch or pay attention to during this horrifying mountain lava diarrhea volcano that we are all living through currently and have been for the last year. So kudos to you, my friend.
Thank you very much.
You'd expect that from someone who's been doing this for years and years and years, who says, you know what? I've been given a lot. It's about time I turn this shit around and start paying it in the forward direction. And you've just been doing it since you had this opportunity. And I think that is a really, really swell and a really rare thing to see. Sorry, I'm getting so soapboxy and preachy.
No, thank you very much.
You're so impassioned. Oh, Italians get very impassioned. You and I are both Taurus. You know?
Oh, yes.
Your birthday's May 10th, yeah?
May 7th.
May 7th. Sorry.
Right
okay.
There,
yeah. No research done. I was guessing.
through a day out there.
My birthday is April 20th. It is National Marijuana Day.
Oh, very nice.
It is Hitler's birthday as well.
Well, that's less nice.
That's less. It's also the Columbine shooting. So.
Okay, really not good. Two of the three things.
This really day crescendoed into horrifying.
Yeah, 50% of the things on your birthday are bad.
People tell me a lot, I'm a Taurus, and I know I am because of where my birthday lands, but what does that mean when someone says that to you, and how do you think you're a Taurus? How do you think I'm a Taurus?
I know for me, I'm stubborn. I don't do well with new, like uncertainty. I really don't do well with uncertainty. I don't do well with, like...
Oh, so 2020 was the year for you, then?
Oh my God, I was in this dream. Like, that's so much of why I made all this stuff, was to have, like, something I had to do every Friday.
So you,
like,
can have a little control in your life?
Exactly. Like that? Yeah. All this stuff was to distract me, and so if it was distracting other people, that was just, like, the biggest bonus ever. But, like...
It was all a ruse. He's not really this generous.
Oh, yeah, I don't care about people. But, you
know,
I...
First, folks.
But it's... No, I think I'm stubborn. I don't... I have trouble adjust. Like, I remember when we were starting Broadway Whodunit, we had this whole other idea of what it was going to be. And then my brother, who's very much my partner in all of this with me and Alex, is like, came up with this other better idea of what it is now. And I was like, no, that's crazy, for like 2 days. And then I was like, okay, yeah, we, like, that's just how I sort of am.
Sure, sure.
My chart makes too much sense. I don't know if you, like, know a lot about astrology. I don't really know a lot about astrology. I've been learning a lot more.
I know practically zero. And every time someone, like, does a reading or tells me my moon or whatever, the information is, like, absorbed for 4 seconds and then totally dissipates.
Yeah.
I have no idea what they just said. I'll never remember.
I've been the same until very recently, when I've sort of started to pick up on more of, like, somebody would be like, I'm a Scorpion. I'm like, ew, you know, stuff like that. But, like, that, like, just little things of, like, I know how to react. I know how to sort of, but I'm a Taurus sun with a Leo rising and a Pisces moon, which, if you know anything about astrology, you're right now listening to this podcast saying, yeah, that makes sense.
So, like, I just imagine the three animals basically that go together there, with, like, the bull and then the lion and then a fish. That's kind of
I'm seeing. I'm stubborn. I'm a Taurus. There's other things about being a Taurus that I don't really remember. I'm like, I present as very, like,
yeah,
confident and take up a lot of space, which is definitely true. Yeah. And then my moon is that like I'm very like emotional and sensitive, which all makes a lot of
sense. That makes perfect sense. And it makes sense that like I think you and I are pretty simpatico in all the ways that you just mentioned in terms of being stubborn, but also open for collaboration and also being a sensitive soul in the sense that you might have this loud presence, but you're there to just, you know, you want to move people, baby. You're there to get people fucking thinking about the emotion, diving deep, bringing tears to them, getting them thinking about things. You should have a talk with that general from Mulan. Maybe he'd listen to you.
Maybe he'd listen to me.
Maybe he would. All right, real quick question. You mentioned your brother.
Yes.
He's an actual brother, or is he like a friend you call your brother? Is
he's
your brother?
Actually my cousin.
Your cousin. This just got me way more complex. Okay. Yeah. But you refer to him as your brother because you're that close.
We were raised together, essentially, yeah.
Oh, okay, amazing. Tell me about that. Tell me, you're still being raised as far as I'm concerned because you were born in the year 2016. But I want to know what your household was like. And like, there's a reason we all kind of fall into musical theater and make our way into show business. And sometimes it's a really damaged part of us. Sometimes it's a really supported part of us. So tell me a bit about your upbringing and your childhood and this cousin brother of yours. It sounds like you're from the South. Jesus Christ. Cousin brother? Is that a thing?
Yeah, I was really I was very much supported growing up. As far as I was really concerned, my family life is kind of complicated, but I didn't know when I was growing up. My family did such a good job of kind of shielding me to sort of the more complicated stuff until I got a little older. But
yeah,
everyone was really supportive. It was me, my sister, who's my actual sister, my mom and dad, and then my like aunt and uncle and their two sons, my two cousins live around the corner. So
where are you raised?
We're here in Woodmere, in Nassau County, on Long Island.
On Long Island. Oh my God, New York boy. We love it.
Oh yeah. That's sort of what it was I've traced it back to a couple things of like why I'm crazy about theater. Cause my family was not, my sister did theater in high school, but that was never really her like thing.
Yeah.
My brother's a musician, but like, that's also kind of a different thing. I think it started really from music of like my sister, my brother being like violin players, and my brother would play the mandolin and all this, like he's so cool. But then when I was 6 months old, I went to Disney World for the first time. My family took me because they promised my sister that nothing would change when I was born. So the Disney World trip happened and I was taken. So that was just like in my kind of blood. And then I was 3 years old and they took me to see Beauty and the Beast on Broadway.
Yeah.
And I just kind of, on a very subconscious level, this sounds very like I was very like astute for a 3 year old. It was just kind of like what I kind of came to understand was this is another way to get there. Like I just kind of understood that this is the same thing. And then I was 4 years old.
Wow.
High School Musical came out. And High School Musical was kind of the thing that I was like, oh, I want to do that. Like, I want to be that cool guy.
Wow. This was in your whole life was in the stars for you, man. It was just in the absolute stars.
It happened very, very, but then I didn't even know I could go and do theater until I was probably 8 years old. Cause I think my family was worried that what ended up happening would happen, that I would like fall in love with it. I did not have like a stage mom or like a stage anything. We called her the anti-stage mom. Cause she was so like, she wanted me to like get a liberal arts education and like have a backup plan always. And like, I started going into programming a little bit, like all this crazy,
you know, you're very similar already. I'm getting similarities too. And I hope you take this as a compliment because I certainly look at this person as somewhat of this beacon of theater kid, but he was raised by super not theater people. And you'd never guess that it was Rob McClure, who is such, you are very similar to him. Just
that is the highest of compliments you could possibly pay me.
100%. I'm getting Rob McClure vibes left and right. It's a beautiful thing to see. And I like seeing any ounce of that energy continue to spread to younger generations. It's really cool to see that.
He's one of my favorite people on the planet.
He's the best. When your success started to grow and you got Dear Evan Hansen and like, it really did seem like the snowball effect and everything was just like going your way. Was your mom like, oh shit, what do we do?
Like, my mom, when the
you figure it out, you know?
Yes. When the Jimmys happened, my mom was like, all right, I can't stop him anymore. She was kind of like, I didn't know you were good at this. Because she's been watching me do it.
Your mom's never seen you in a performance ever once.
No, she came to literally every single one of my shows. There were probably two shows she missed and I could name them, like two performances of like shows that I would do 12 of that she missed and I could name them. But like she was at every single performance of every like tour, and by tour I mean like we went to fucking like libraries in around Long Island. But like,
I remember that shit growing up. Yeah.
But she once the Jimmys happened, she's like, I didn't know you were good at this. I knew that I liked you. Like, I knew that I liked watching you, but I'm your mom. Like, you know,
she didn't have like a barometer of like what talent actually was. She was just looking at the boy being like, so when, he seems to like this.
When I had been cast in Dear Evan Hansen, though, she hadn't seen it. And I was so nervous. And Stacey, like, got us tickets to go see it. Like, very good seats to see Taylor in the show. And I was worried that my mom was going to say, no, no way. I'm not going to let you do this. I know you're already cast, but no, no way.
Yeah.
And we got in the car after, and she goes, I was watching it to see whether or not you could do that. And you could, and you can. And I know you can.
God. Yeah. Applause to mom. What's your mom's name?
Her name's Barbara. Barbara.
Babs.
She was the best throughout that whole entire experience. She passed in August of while I was doing the show in August of 2019.
I am so sorry to hear that, Andrew.
Thank you.
I had no idea. Again, no research, very much. But I'm so sorry to hear that.
It's all right. It's been I guess like a year and a half now. It was a crazy, crazy, crazy experience. But I think, you know, I was just remembered the other day that when that happened, Justin Paul, who's obviously one of the composers of Dear Evan Hansen, wrote me an email that was like, there's a reason why this dream came at this time, so she could see you do it. Like
that is completely true. I agree with what Justin had to say.
I'm very, very, I will always be grateful that this came at the time it did, so that she could see that
you
I
know,
was going to be all right.
Not to harp on this and not to turn this into the Oprah Winfrey interview, because I have some silly questions here, but it's been a theme a little bit in several episodes of this podcast. We've talked about parents being either out of their lives completely or losing a parent, and Emma Hutton, who lost both of her parents in her lifetime, and Brandon Ellis, who lost his father right when he was making his Broadway principal debut in Bandstand, and how that affected them going forward, because you have this momentum behind you pushing you, and all of a sudden you're doing it without that important support in your life. And you being so young, but you have this, you're fooling all of us because you have such a mature sensibility. And I feel like talking to another 30-year-old right now.
That's very kind.
Like, I feel like you and I should have like a vodka soda right now and be just chatting about it. But
give me a couple years,
folks. So after your mom passed, and again, I am so sorry to hear that, just because that's horrifying news, it's devastating, but what shifted? Did anything shift in terms of your pursuit and what your mission statement as an artist became? Because I see so much of the give back and so much of you wanting to continue to create, obviously for the fulfillment of your own soul, but there is a magnet on you because people are drawn to you because of what seems like the generosity in your spirit. Is that always something that's been there? Is that something that you feel like you needed to enhance after your mom was no longer here? How did her passing shift you, Andrew Feldman?
Yeah, I like to think that I wasn't on a track to like become an asshole, and that's because of her. Like she taught me how to not be an asshole.
Yeah.
How to she was that magnet. Literally, she was more famous than me, like on Long Island, simply because like we'd go out for dinner and she'd have to say hello to literally everyone in the restaurant.
Oh, I love that. Like the unofficial mayor of the town.
Exactly.
I love that.
Precisely. So like, but any assholery that may or may not have been brewing was like vanquished in that experience of her passing. I was like, I have to carry on.
Well, because if you're a late teen, you know, how easy is it to
become
the assholery? Assholery.
So, and I was definitely like a teen of like
East Side, by the way.
I was definitely like, I don't want to take out the trash, like stuff like that, you know. Yeah. But like any real, you know, sort of lasting stuff, I think her being sick and passing kind of really got rid of any of that, which I couldn't. We've had so much sort of difficulty in our lives that like before her passing that you know that wouldn't have happened for her to prepare me on how to deal with tragedy and stuff if I hadn't had to deal with more, you know.
Wow.
So like her
100%.
Sort of teaching me how to look at the good and be thankful for the positive. When she passed, all I wanted to do was get back to the show, and Stacey was like, I am insisting that you take a week off, like, and so I took some time off. But
I'm also glad that you did that. Just for
I am too. In hindsight, I very much
thank her down the line for making that suggestion.
She was absolutely right. But all I wanted to do was get back to it. But now I so very much use it in my art and to give back. We're renovating and renaming the theater facilities at my school after her. So we're doing a couple concerts to raise money for that.
Buddy, I love that.
It's really cool. I'm writing. I'm working on a play with Gabby Karuba, who played opposite me in the show as Zoe, who's like my best friend, about sort of that whole experience. So it's yeah, I do what I've always done, and I sort of use it, but also learning how to not like overexpose myself to it to an extent of reliving trauma. You know, it's using it to be grateful and ground myself and remember the lessons that she taught me and that experience taught me.
I love that. I love hearing that. It's really, you know, listening to you, I could listen to you talk all day. You should have your own fucking podcast, but you have such a smart way of looking at things. You have a really, really insightful way of kind of looking through and looking in. And I feel like the people you become friends with, I think you attract good. That's what I think. That's what I'm assessing.
And I hope so.
And with what inspires you as an artist and how you try to create these other things, and I know that you've probably done a bit of it here and there based on the other things you're working on, but have you thought, just because I'm hearing it in your bones, man, have you thought about being a writer at all?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. I've been a composer for like almost as long as I've been an actor. I've been a composer of music and stuff, but I was never really... sort of. I did like the this Star Wars thing at 54 Below where like a Star Wars musical that I wrote in eighth grade, but that like barely counts. I've done a couple. I have some music sort of coming out of like my own stuff. So like I've been writing music for a really, really long time, but I was never really, I always wanted to be able to write plays or whatever. And I never really thought I could. And kind of what I found at every juncture of the last, I guess like year and a half of was like, I don't think I could write a play. And then I found myself sitting down and doing it with Gabby and like, or with Whodunit, this thing that we did. Like, I was like, I don't think I can write the mysteries. I have to find someone else. And in like the process of finding someone else, that taking so long, I just started jotting down ideas. And then I had a whole mystery. So I guess what I've kind of learned is to trust myself.
I'm telling you, somebody who's gone through that much at such a young age in terms of loss and gain, like all at once, basically, it seems like you have 900 plays in you. You don't even realize it. And you've been composing. You've got musicals in you, man. Shit. And
thank you very, very much.
Broadway's about to open up. Hurry up and write one.
I'm working on it. Trust me.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I think it's clear that we just don't deserve a guy like Andrew Barth Feldman. What a gent he is. Hey, this interview's not over yet. This is just me interrupting to remind you that he's taken the time to talk to me. He's taken the time to make all this content for you guys. So what you can do to support him and all of our guests on this podcast is follow them on their socials and keep your thumbs on the pulse of what they have going on, because there's lots of it. You can find Andrew Barth Feldman on Instagram and Twitter and beyond at Andrew B. Feldman. And while you're using your thumbs on your devices, please make sure to download the Broadway Podcast Network app and find this podcast, Now We're Talking, wherever you stream your podcast. Give us a like, rate us, and follow. Andrew, let's hop into some silliness. How's that
sound? I love that so much.
Here's some silliness.
Okay.
What do you think? Now, let me paint the picture here. This is written, I'm looking at this notepad, and I wrote this maybe in my sleep. I don't know. I honestly don't remember writing what I'm about to read. So, you know, sometimes you're a wizard, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you got like a little vial, and then you, when you throw that vial down on the ground, what happens? It's like a big puff,
like
of, smoke,
puff of smoke,
and you
yeah.
can make an amazing exit. Now, I guess the question I'm asking here is, what do you think the most awkward conversation to make that exit in would be?
I don't know. Like,
I think it's the girl saying I'm pregnant, and then you go,
I'm pregnant.
I kind of like
I'm serving you for divorce.
Boom, exactly. You're getting,
and then you like, yeah, being like, I'm suing you. Like, that's good. I think it's kind of fun in any situation. I think
it
I would kind of
it could
just
be
walk
fun
that
in
around.
Any situation. It really, really could. Okay, I just wanted to know what your take was on that. We don't have to dwell. I had that written down, and I was trying to translate what this meant. Stupid little thought for you. You know the furniture store Restoration Hardware?
I'm familiar, yeah.
Do you know that it has one of the most bourgeois restaurants inside of it? And they're starting
no.
to open up all over major cities in the country right now, including New York, Chicago, LA, up here in the Bay Area where I currently am. The Restoration Hardware, they must have looked at IKEA, where you can buy meatballs. And they said, we're going to do you one better. You can buy wine. You can have high-end
wow.
cheese. It's like a really fancy restaurant where you might see like a celebrity or something.
Wow.
Why do we think as a society that furniture stores are they go hand in hand with restauranting? Why do you think that is, Andrew Feldman, your thoughts?
Oh, wow. I'd imagine it has to do with a level of comfort, right? That's like... when you've just eaten, what I think furniture business, it's very smart, because when you've just eaten, what do you want to do? You want to like
oh, yeah.
sit down on the couch.
You
want to
go sit. That's right. I was
down.
At a Restoration Hardware restaurant, and I got in trouble afterwards because I crawled into one of the beds. I was like, oh boy, I need a nap. That was a big tall beer. I really need a nap right now.
Yeah, that's the
crawled
trick.
Into
I
one
think.
Of the expensive
like, oh,
beds.
Oh man, I love this couch.
What is it? Is it going to become a thing? Like West Elm is going to open up a little cafe? And
I like it. I like when things are more than one thing.
I do too. I just don't. Where did like the monopoly of furniture stores exclusively making it a restaurant?
It is interesting.
ABC Kitchen is part of ABC Furniture in New York City. Did you know that?
That's no. I that's interesting.
That's a John.
It's gotta be.
That's
it's
a
gotta have to do
restaurant.
Like, it's got to have to do with like tryptophan or like just like
it must someone
you know?
Scientists working on this. It's you
yeah.
know, we could have had the vaccine out a lot sooner, but those same scientists were
working
out, how can we get more money out of customers of furniture stores?
They used to have a restaurant in Build-A-Bear in the city, and now it's Build-A-Dino, unfortunately.
It was Eat-A-Bear, and they would just serve a live endangered wildlife to you.
They used the whole thing was like you have to eat with your hands like a bear.
Yeah.
Unless you're eating a salad and then they give you a fork.
Well, all they served was berries. You know, bears are really ferocious looking, but all they eat is like berries and shit. Or sometimes
it's
they
pretty
have
good.
The salmon out of the water, I
like
suppose.
Honey and stuff, I think that's fun that they
yeah,
like.
Winnie the Pooh, he's a bear, right? Have you ever been to a rainforest cafe?
Oh my god, of course.
What is that place? It used to scare the shit out of me when I was a kid, because in the middle of dinner it's like thunder and lightning and this giant orangutan next to you starts like making all kinds of squeals and grunts.
You're getting into a very personal conversation for me.
I love it. Let's go.
My biggest life goal, my number one thing on the bucket list.
Number one, he's been on Broadway, he's got a TV show,
yes.
and this
now
is his number one thing on the bucket list.
Now this is my number one thing. Obviously before it was different. But now my number one thing on the bucket list is to own a chain of themed restaurants. They're all connected in their own like storyline, and their bars also, and they all have different things. Like there's a space one that has like a glow in the dark mini golf, and
yeah.
there's like a pirate one that has a boat ride. You know, like I
but
want that.
Each restaurant is a different theme.
A
it's
different
not like
theme.
You own like Planet Hollywood, that which
exactly.
is a theme restaurant. You wouldn't own a chain of them. You would own several different.
Yes,
themes.
And so that sort of there will be a coalition of people that
yeah.
will want very much to visit them all around the country or the
I
world.
I love that. You know, the way you could raise funding for this is like big focus groups. Who wants a pirate restaurant? And all the people that want it, if they chip in $1, there you go. You have the
that's
funding for all the lunatics.
That's a good idea.
Okay, well, now that you like one of my ideas, bring me on board. Let's make this a cash cow, my friend.
Sure. Give me some, I really want this really bad. I'm currently, my brother and I are looking to buy an apartment, and my one thing is that I have to have, like, a heavily themed, like, very exploratory sort of vibe tiki bar in the apartment.
In the apartment. Wow.
Well, if it has an outdoor space, we'll do it there.
You don't want to live above a tiki bar. You want
actually... Inside Scoundrel's Cove, I own a tiki bar. Especially it's going to take some time by the time I can actually like drink and stuff.
Scoundrel's Cove.
Scoundrel's Cove is what it's called.
Oh, my word. Scoundrel's Cove. That sounds like a dating app. Welcome to Scoundrel's
Cove. That's the idea. Listen, you could find love at Scoundrel's Cove.
You can find love at Scoundrel's Cove. Sign up, everybody. Okay, a few more stupid thoughts for you. Just, I love bouncing things off like this. It helps me gauge one's personality.
Yeah.
You're a theater dork like I'm a theater
Very
dork.
Much so, yeah.
I'm sure this has been thought of before, but do you think an amazing sequel to Fiddler on the Roof would be Bjelke's story?
Oh. Yeah.
Because she's like the young daughter that no one... He has five daughters, but we only hear about the three.
The three. She's lived through this whole traumatic experience. Bjelke,
and they're watching all this happen. They're watching... They're 5 and 8 or whatever the hell. Yeah. And they're watching their whole lives get destroyed. And their sisters run off with renegades. And good Lord, what a great sequel that would be.
And you know that like Tevye and Goldar aren't going to like... grow up and like shield them from like the truths of what happened, you know, like
no,
like
of course
that's not what's gonna, like they're gonna grow up and be exposed to all that stuff. So I think that's really interesting.
Scene one is Bjelke waking, not waking up, but sitting, lying down on a therapist's couch, and she's in the middle of, yeah, my dad's best friend Laser almost married my sister. Like the whole thing is really kind of screwed up.
That's the best name of any musical theater character ever.
Laser Wolf. You know who I refer to as today's Laser Wolf just based on how he grooms himself? is a composer named Zach Zadek. I don't know if you know who Zach Zadek is, but sometimes I don't see him for like months, and then the next time I see him, he looks like Hagrid. He's just got like this beard, huge hair, and he's insane. That is the only time I'll throw at a Harry Potter reference. I really don't know anything about... I'm amazed I got that name right. Did I get that right?
Hagrid? Yeah, Rubius Hagrid. This is a, you know, you're kind of fine. This is a bad climate to start liking Harry Potter in.
So yeah, you're right. Listen, I haven't started liking it. I'm 10 years behind knowing the character names.
It's a rough time to be a Harry Potter fan. I can speak from experience.
Well, I thought you all were nerds back then, and I think you're all nerds today, but now your leader is just someone who hates trans people. So,
exactly.
Next stupid little thought for you.
Please.
What is something... Andrew Feldman. Okay. What is something that is acceptable for kids that you wish was acceptable for adults?
Chuck E. Cheese.
Why is that not acceptable?
You have to be like, you have to have a kid to go in.
You legally have to have a child
to
go in.
It won't let
Cheese.
You in unless you...
Here's why that's fucked up. Let me start right away with why that's fucked up. Because if you go on Seamless to order food... If you want pizza, did you know that Chuck E. Cheese is an option for delivery?
Yeah, I know.
So you can order a pizza from Chuck E. Cheese, but you can't go into their establishment unless you're toting a child with you.
Well,
Chuck E.
Cheese, think about it. It's a safety measure. It's a safety measure of, like, pedophiles.
Oh, I see.
They call them in Britain.
Yeah.
You know, making sure that that's not an issue.
Why do you pronounce it that way?
I watched Broadchurch recently. I don't know if you've seen Broadchurch, but there's a lot of talk of pedophiles. And so
his audition for Broadchurch.
Yeah, my audition for Broadchurch.
That was it. That was it.
But no, it's a mark against that, and also for kid, like it's where a kid can be a kid.
You're right. I really. That's their tagline, isn't it?
That is the tagline.
Well, it would be disappointing to see a childless adult like just sitting in the ball pit.
But then there's
other really enjoying the animatronic show. You know,
well,
like,
listen, I would do that definitely.
You freak!
I love that stuff. Are you kidding me? I did a whole series on Twitter while I was in Dear Evan Hansen of just talking about the history of different Disney animatronics. That's a real.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Yeah, I'm a real nerd.
My favorite spoof of that is in the Goofy movie when they go to that possum I don't know if you know, oh my god, the Possum Jamboree or whatever that is. I was rolling on the floor laughing. I thought that was so funny.
It was it's excellent.
All right, I want to ask you a couple of more stupid questions, but this is a little game I like to play, Andrew. This is called Most Impossible Questions. The answers are going to be hard, but you have to answer. It's gun to your head kind of stuff, okay?
Okay.
Here we go. Question one, Andrew Feldman. Andrew Barth Feldman. Barth with a TH. Mm-hmm. It's just no with matter what, if you end a name with a TH at the end of it, I'm always going to assume I'm saying it incorrectly or I'm not saying the full name, but Barth.
Yeah, sure.
Andrew Barth Feldman. Okay, here we go. Oh, I hope we work together one day, dude. I really do.
I do too.
Andrew Barth Feldman, the game is Most Impossible Questions. You have to answer. You have to pick. If you could have, if the world had one composer that I'm about to name that never existed, never existed.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Who would it be? Would it be Andrew Lloyd Webber, Stephen Sondheim, or Richard Rodgers? Which of those three...
I have to pick, like,
you
which one...
You have to pick which one, if you had to, which one that never existed.
Okay, would so it be? Here's
Meaning
the
all
thing.
The musicals would be gone. There wouldn't be a stamp in history made by one of them. Which one
So then this... Is, yeah, so this is my question.
Yeah.
Is there legacy of, like, musical... Like, how they've shaped musical theater that has also changed?
It must be, because they will never have existed.
Then I'm going to say Richard Rodgers. Here's why.
I guess I could have made that noise for any of these choices.
Because Richard Rodgers has inspired Sondheim so much. But if Sondheim still exists, then we still have sort of his body of work, his style of musical theater. Andrew Lloyd Webber. I would choose Andrew Lloyd Webber if their legacy could still continue and like rock musicals and the way that he shaped that was still sort of a thing. But he did create that. And that's...
Yes.
So crucial to contemporary musical theater. You put those two composers together, you get what we currently have as contemporary musical theater. So, like,
so kids, what you just heard here today is Andrew Barth Feldman would really prefer if Carousel, Oklahoma, The King and I, Cinderella never existed straight out of his mouth. That is what he,
as opposed to like the other ones. Yeah, absolutely, I'll stand by that.
Oh, you know what? I'm actually 100% with you. I'm 100% with you. So I'm only giving you a hard time. Here's the next couple of questions. The world's going to end unless... This is a little dark, a little topical. I just realized how I worded this. But here we go. The world's going to end unless one of these shows closes. Which one is it? Hamilton, Dear Evan Hansen, or Six? Now, if you say Six, you're automatically sexist.
Yeah,
so
that's what I was going to think. Well, it's true, though. It's a big show.
And if you say Hamilton, you're kind of a racist, dude. So,
and if I say Dear Evan Hansen, I'm in trouble.
If you say Dear Evan Hansen, you're
the
actually
world
like,
is going to end unless one of these shows exists. So I have shows. To pick which one.
Yeah, you have to. Who's the sacrificial lamb here? He's sweating.
You put me in a bind, Drew Gaspar.
I know, and this is not like James Corden where you have to eat like a fisheye instead. You
I'd
have
like
to answer.
To. I would eat in this. Kate. I mean, not Hamilton. I'm not going to pick Hamilton.
Okay.
Because that's too important.
I love this. This is such a rotten game to play.
Okay. I am going to pick Six, and here's why.
Oh my god, he hates women. Everybody heard it,
Six?
Right?
I definitely don't hate women. But Six hasn't started the kinds of conversations that Dear Evan Hansen and Hamilton have started in regard to how we think about theater, how we think about ourselves. That being said, I would prefer very strongly if Six did stay and if that didn't happen. But like, that just because the conversation that Dear Evan Hansen has started about anxiety and the conversation that Hamilton has started about race in theater and also just like what it means to be like a musical and also about history and stuff, I think that's very important. Now, Six has also had a conversation about history very much, but I think, like, at least as far as I'm concerned, because we haven't really had it in the States. So as far as I'm concerned, that's my answer.
But I maybe, listen. You are clarifying this on like a college level right now. Thank you so much. I really, truly, thank you so much for the clarification and validating your response and your answer. A really good answer. I'm going to give you one more of these most impossible questions,
please.
And then I'm going to thank you for your time, and I'm going to wish you a good afternoon.
Right.
But before we get there, last question for you. This is a little silly. Rank most likely to least likely. Which of these characters would vote for Trump?
Oh, no.
One, Javert from Les Mis. Two, Beetlejuice from Beetlejuice. Three, Mama Rose from Gypsy. Who I personally think was like a total Karen. So I think she could have easily been that.
One is Javert. Javert voted for Trump. I don't know. Because I feel like he's the kind of Republican that's like, he's like a Lincoln Project Republican, I feel.
Yeah, okay. All right. That's, wow. Oh, man, do I love your answers, because you're really giving them thought. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Javert is a Lincoln Project Republican.
So, because like he like likes order or whatever. So,
ooh, let
like,
me toss out this fan theory for you.
Please.
Beetlejuice is Donald Trump. Maybe he possessed him and started causing all this havoc for the fun that Beetlejuice would have, because
that's what I was gonna say. I think Beetlejuice would just have a good time over the last couple of years.
Wow.
You know, so I think Beetlejuice, Mama Rose, Javert.
Wow, those are great. I think even Mama Rose, like if this was the musical theater version of Trump, I think Mama Rose would be hired into the administration. I really think that
she'd
would
be like the Secretary of Education. Yeah,
and her and Javert would be having Twitter wars and shit. I really think that that would be kind of what's going on.
She'd have a podcast.
Andrew Barth Feldman, I really mean this from the bottom of my heart. You are a class act in every
Thank
respect.
You very much.
I have been a fan of yours. I've been a fan of watching the things that you put your hand on. You've got this amazing, generous touch. I know for a fact that you are doing your mom so proud with everything
Thank
you're
you
doing.
Very much.
I really, from Dear Evan Hansen to the Ratatouille musical, which was basically the first of its kind, though, so you got to give it up for that kind of collaborative effort, and what you guys did for the Actors Fund and everything was pretty outstanding. And now you got High School Musical, the series, which is my least favorite title of anything, but I'll say it because it's fun to say.
That's the idea.
I know. It's great marketing, and it's also horrible marketing. It's the perfect kind of thing. I truly mean it. I hope that when the world opens back up, you can do a concert with me, or hell, shit, let's get you in Karate Kid. Wouldn't that be fun?
Hey, listen. Sure. I'll do anything.
I really appreciate you taking the time and letting me get to know you a bit, because I've kind of been wanting to. Like, this is really, really cool.
I would love
for
that
me.
So much. Yeah.
And we will work together one day. And when you are of age, martinis are on me, my friend. Okay.
Right. I'm such a huge fan of you and everything you do and have done and have always been. So this is the best. Thank you so
I
much.
I really appreciate
me.
That, dude. A couple of Andrews just giving each other compliments. How do you like that, folks? All right. Thanks so much, Andrew. Wow. 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 What a great interview this was. I hope y'all learned a lot. I just had a tremendous time talking to this kid. Hey, thank you so much, all of you, for listening. Now We're Talking is a proud member of the Broadway Podcast Network. Yes, indeed, we are. You can find out more about me and this podcast at bpn.fm/nowwe'retalking or bpn.fm/NWT. Feel free to download the Broadway Podcast Network app and keep tabs on everything else we got going on there. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Drew Gasparini or at The Drew Gasparini. A special thanks to our handsome guest today, Mr. Andrew Barth Feldman. I wish him all the best, and I can't wait to see what he does next. I look forward to working with him in the future. Make sure you subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream your podcast, and keep tuning in for more amazing guests. Next week is our finale, so don't miss out. We'll see you then.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.